When you're trading options, Fidelity has just what you need with straightforward but powerful tools to help you select a strategy and execute your ideas. And they offer a wide range of information and insights to help simplify your trading experience. Have a question? Ask it live during their small classes and coaching sessions. Need information? Check out their educational videos, articles, and webinars. See why it's easy to trade options your way at Fidelity. Start now at fidelity.com/options. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. Straight up 1 o'clock on the East Coast, Guy Adami, Dan Nathan, soon to be joined by the great Carter Braxtonworth, back from vacation, the bearded Carter Worth, by the way. What appears to be a benign day, maybe it is, but we got some trade ideas. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great. It does feel benign, Guy, but we're going to trade the options today. We got a couple really good ideas that we're excited about expressing them through the options market here. And thank goodness that Carter is back, because it's been a week since you and I've talked to him. And I think we're getting a little exhausted at the pace in which new highs have been made in the S&P and the NASDAQ. It seems like we're levitating here. He's going to kind of help us figure out which way the S&P is going to go next. So we're just going to do that with Carter Braxtonworth. Guy, before we get to some of the trade ideas and get to Carter, what's your take here on a day like today where, you know, you had two IPOs last week? They're basically up 100% in the last week. One of them would be Reddit. This is a company that I think a lot of folks are pretty familiar with. It doesn't make money. It only had less than $1 billion in revenue last year. They lost like $91 million. They're getting some revenue by selling their data for some of these large language models, right, that train on this sort of data. So that's, I guess, exciting, high margin. But again, this company has not been profitable ever. And then the other one was Astera Labs, which is kind of in the semi space here. And this is one where, again, you know, small company, small deal, doing really well. And then we obviously have the Trump SPAC that I think at one point this morning was up 60% first day of trading at DJT. When you see this sort of price action in some new issues that don't have a lot of history here at all, what does that kind of make you think at this point? Because we're leading the show talking about that. It's more about the sentiment as it relates to those, and then, you know, versus some other key themes in the market.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought it up, because today, if there's any day to bring it up with the market doing pretty much, you know, sideways, today's the day. And, you know, it harkens back to things we've seen over the last few years. And there's this appetite for risk. And, you know, I hate to use the term, but for lack of a better one, in some of these, the casino is open again and people are playing at the $100 table. And quite frankly, you know, if you've been long some of these names, you've done extraordinarily well. The concern that we've had all along is, you know, it speaks to a bit of a disconnect, I think, in terms of the economy and the broader market, and then a disconnect between what's going on within the broader market, as you're pointing out now. So I can't use it as a timing mechanism, and you're not suggesting that at all, but it's definitely something to be aware of, because the animal spirits, at least through a number of different things, you throw Bitcoin on that pile as well, are alive and well.
Well, I think that's a great point. And, you know, when you think about the market in 2021 that kept defying, you know, all sorts of gravity, what were the things that were going crazy? It was SPACs, it was crypto, and it was kind of recent tech IPOs too. And so it was interesting that as soon as the Fed signaled in late 2021 that they're going to start to raise interest rates, right, to kind of cool the economy down, probably cool financial conditions down, those were the first things to get killed, mm-hmm. right? And so again, you know, like if we're in a little bit of a scarcity bubble, these things could continue to go higher. And listen, this is kind of a PSA here. While some of us might think it's fun to talk about a DJT and what it's worth, it's got $3.5 million in revenues, it loses a lot of money, it is the perfect Ponzi scheme. people. So just understand this. If you think it's a total zero, and if you think that Reddit, which has been around for nearly two decades and, you know, is a proper internet company, and this thing is brand new, you know what I mean? It has a $10 billion market cap. Just, you know, it could go to 20, it could go to 30, it could go to zero for all we know. So like, you agree with that, guy? Like the idea of trying to take too strong of a view on something that seems ridiculous in an irrational market is probably not a great way to trade right now.
Well, I mean, you know, fair enough, but we've seen similar with obviously GameStop, we've seen similar with AMC. So business models that might not necessarily be robust or pristine or viable, whatever word you want to use, that doesn't mean the stocks can't do well for a period of time and do extraordinarily well for a period of time. And we're back into seemingly that type of, I don't want to call it regime, but that type of sort of market structure, which again can last for a period of time. But you wonder what it's sort of, if anything, what it's signaling in terms of, you know, what the broader market is in for. You know, you have a volatility index that continues to sort of trade lower, sideways to slightly lower. So right now, you know, through those lenses, complacency is high. I think good times are clearly high, but one has to wonder how long this is going to last.
No doubt. All right, let's throw up the rundown here really quickly. We just kind of alluded to the fact we're going to do a little chart check with Carter on the S&P, and we'll also take a look at yields. You and I want to talk about the utility sector, not a sector we've talked about in a while. I have a bullish trade idea there. And then Carter on Worth Charting this morning had a really nice checkup on Caterpillar, and you're kind of bearish there. So we're going to do that one. And by the way, shoot over a couple questions, and specifically if you want to kind of you know, kind of get a sense of how we use options aside from the trade ideas that we're going to detail, and hopefully we'll get some time to answer them at the end of the show. All right, let's do it. It's been a while. Carter Braxton Worth of Worth Charting. Carter, welcome. Ben. How are you?
You got a fire going in the back. I mean, that is like, that's beautiful.
It looks
like a Rockwell picture.
It really does. He's the man. Well, we appreciate you coming on. And you know, listen, we've talked about the S&P. We've talked about the pace in which it's made new highs in 2024. We've talked about how it's outpaced the equal weight S&P, despite the fact that we keep hearing about a broadening out. I look at the RSP, Carter, and I see it up 5.5% in the year versus the S&P 500, the SPY up 9.6%. So we continue to have that kind of, you know, cap-weighted index outperforming a little bit. What are your thoughts here? You know, we're getting a quarter end. Sometimes there's a little bit of shenanigans, you know, this sort of thing, month end, quarter end, that sort of thing. What are you thinking here with the SPX?
Sure. And we'll look at a few charts in a second. But I mean, if you think about the lows of October, right, and now where we are, we're up about 28% in the major averages, S&P being the one that's considered the benchmark. And it's a fairly steep at this point. Think about it. You're annualizing at this rate. We're up 10%+. We'd be a 40% year. So it's a fairly steep, uncorrected, and now mature intermediate advance, 5 months in the making without so much as a 3% drawdown. Typically, if you look at all 5% plus sell-offs, dips, whatever word you'd like, going back to the 1920s, they occur every sort of 110 days. They basically were getting overdue for something that's more garden variety, more like 6 or 7. And those are resets. They're positive, not negative. But either way, does one, and this is the hard part, does one add exposure to equities as a general matter, or does one reduce? Any reducing of exposure heretofore, a week ago, 10 weeks ago, has been wrong and means one has left gains and profits on the table. But nothing goes forever. And so it's just a question of whether one should reduce. And I think reducing is perfectly, whether you do that through options, which is a very astute way to do it, right, which is hedging, or actually reducing. That's my thinking. But we can look at a few charts if that's productive.
I think that's very productive. And as we look at them real quick before and walk through, but you know, Dan mentioned earlier, this is obviously a short week. This is month end, quarter end. Is there any statistical significance to that whatsoever? Or do people like me put too much emphasis on those types of things?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, there's milestones in terms of levels. If Bitcoin get to this level, right? Or if how many months in a row? Tough to make hay. Statistically, there's not much to that. It's a little bit of a comfort blanket. It feels good, and then not certain that there's anything to it. But I certainly am aware of it. I try to look at that. I mean, we can look at that another time. But let's. So this is, I put it in log scale to try to mute to some extent the current steep ascent. But if you look at this 5-month move, it's only sort of comparable in terms of steepness is really the ricochet off the COVID low. And that's the issue. We're getting steep and uncorrected. Let's put some lines in here. Same 10-year chart. These are weekly bars. We can flash that if you want, take it on and take it off. So the channel, in effect, since the lows of October 2022, we've now kind of pushed out through the upper band of that. And that does, to some extent, put in context just how steep this move is. Another reference point is not only the channel which we've been in, but of course the high of 2021. So if we look at that iteration, what you'll see is that we, of course, are well above that. We're about 8-9% above that high. So a check back, some sort of counter trend here, interestingly, back to the 150-day moving average would also leave you back at the former high from which we broke out, the highs of late 2021, early 2022. And I think that would be perfectly reasonable. In fact, if you're bullish, that's what would set this up for yet more gains. Because going higher and higher here without a setback, what I like to call as a check back, sets you up for something worse to the downside when you start to go parabolic.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Carter. Liz Young was on with us last week, and we were talking about this stat that now I see working its way through the market a little bit. It's been the longest period since 2018 that the S&P has not closed down 2% on the day. I think it's like 280 days or so. And again, this is kind of echoing the question that Guy had about, you know, quarter end stuff and all that sort of stuff. Do stats like that mean anything to you and the work that you do in technical
analysis? Well, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to, but you couldn't make big bets on them, right? Because the nature of records are always meant to be broken. Things can always go longer. But if we, maybe let's go to the very first chart, which shows the S&P with no annotations and just the 150-day moving average. And if we were to look at the most extended in terms of moments above trend, above the smoothing mechanism, we'd all agree that that spike in February of 2018 is one, and we dumped hard after that. Mm-hmm. Then mid-2018, and we really dumped hard. And then early 2020 before COVID, and then we really dumped hard, meaning it doesn't have to drop hard, but we're reaching the point at which that has to be more and more in one's consideration.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Guy, you know, we talked about this last week when we were looking at the NASDAQ 100, we're looking at the QQQ. And, you know, if you just look at implied volatility, the price of options, right, in these very large indexes, I mean, the implied movement, whether it's a week or 2 week or whatever, it's like below what you would guess. You know what I mean? Like if you were just going to look where IV is, implied vol in the SPY, you know, it's like 11% or something like that. It's implying, you know, much less than 1% moves on a daily basis. Carter, you know, Guy is often very focused on the treasury market, on the yield market. And one of the things I think Guy, well, real quickly, I mean, you know, give me your take, because again, you know, yields are kind of stuck in the mud here, right? But it doesn't matter whether yields go up, equities don't sell off. When yields go down, equities, I mean, it's like we're kind of in this weird conundrum as it relates to the relationship between the S&P and the 10-year yield right now.
Yeah, well, I think for the last, I don't know, few months or so, this range that we found ourselves in, I think it's provided a bit of a calming influence to equity investors and traders alike. They're, you know, we can sort of maintain and live within this range. And quite frankly, nothing's going to theoretically go wrong in the equity market. And I guess to a certain extent, that makes sense. You know, I've been of the belief that yields would continue to go higher. I mean, that was wrong for a while. That was right for a while. You know, we'll see what happens here. You know, but Carter will lay out something that shows, you know, maybe we're at sort of the upper end of this range that we found ourselves in, this sort of, I don't know, somewhere between 4 and 4.3%, and, you know, at the higher end of things. But to your earlier point, I think that's spot on. The equity market, quite frankly, doesn't seem to care. I guess on the downside, 3.8%, I know this is far away, but maybe that's your line in the sand. On the upside, maybe it's somewhat north of 4.75% where people get concerned, but somewhere in that band, you know, equities seemingly are unafraid of the bond market right now.
Yeah, Carter, walk us through a little bit what you're seeing in the 10-year. And again, you know, last week, I think you were probably tracking what Fed Chair Powell said, you know, at the presser there. And investors took it as pretty dovish, except for the fact that if you look at, you know, the CME Fed Funds tracker, you know, there's a 65% probability of the first cut since basically 2020, you know, March of 2020 in June. And who knows, there it is right there. And you know, who knows what sort of happens here, but equities, you know, they're keying off the fact that the Fed is done. I think that's the most important point. And so talk to us about what you're seeing in the chart of the 10-year yield.
Sure. Let's put some charts up and we can try to figure out the way forward together. The as annotated here, this is the sort of the key reference point is that it was mid-October of 2022. And in fact, that's the absolute low for the S&P. So we were at 434 and rates surged, as you can see, from August at 2.5% to 4.3. And that crashed the market, right? The S&P was making its low. Was down 27% from its peak. The NASDAQ 100 was down 37% because the human condition to extrapolate. So at that point, you said, my God, people were like, well, if it's 2.5 and it went to 4.3 in 3 months, it's going to be 5.3, 6.3, 8.3. The market is dead. Lower the multiple assumptions. But of course, what happened was the exact opposite. Rates peaked there. And the interesting thing now is we are sitting here at the exact same 10-year yield. We are literally at 434, right? 4.3, as we were when the S&P was at 3,500. The S&P is now 5,250. It is up 50% from that day. And interest rates are unchanged. Despite a lot of volatility, they're unchanged. So let's annotate it another way, just to put the circle in. The point is we forget the flare-up when we went to 502. In the autumn of 2023. That's when people said higher for longer. Of course, that was insane. Not only was it not higher for longer, rates dropped from 5.1 to 3.8. And then 3.8, just in December, they're going to cut six times, eight times. It was very, now they won't cut at all. They'll do one. The truth is, it's just stuck. I'm in the lower rates camp, but this is what a pair of twos is. Let's put another line in here. And so we're just, if you look at the trend line that we've been ascending, we're kind of just in this sort of a moment where it has no character. And the market started to, I guess, sniff that out. They're like, wait a minute, maybe this is Goldilocks. And a lot of the big institutional clients that I talked to, there's like, that's what it is. You start going to 3.7, 3.5, something's wrong. You go to 5.5, can't handle it. But if we sit here at 4, we sit here at 4, we sit here at 4, then market loves it and market does love it. But you can't expand the P multiple forever.
No, and it's interesting. I mean, this chart speaks volumes, and we're clearly up at resistance levels for sure. As Carter pointed out, I think it's fascinating that, you know, the last time we topped out here, as Carter said, the S&P was close to 50, if not 50% lower than we are now. So I guess what this tells you, Dan, it's not necessarily the rate that concerns the market. It's the speed with which we get there. And obviously that move, the first move up to 4.35%, scared a lot of people, not because, again, of the absolute rate, but the speed with regard to the velocity. And to a certain extent, the same thing happened with that move to 5%. But as we sort of muddle around here, you know, the market is pretty comfortable with that. And as long as we don't see these violent moves either up or down, I think the market's going to be fine. So I understand why a pause in rates going higher might seem logical at these current levels.
Yeah, and that leads me to something like, you know, when he says pair twos, it doesn't really want me to trade that instrument. But what I'm trying to do is maybe extrapolate a little here. And so I want to take a look at a group that we haven't talked a lot about on Market Call of late. There hasn't been a good reason to, and that would be utilities. And I want to look at it through the lens of the XLU. And so this is a sector that should do well, I think, in a rate environment like we're in, the one that maybe Carter described, you know, as something that is, you know, not like posing a big opportunity, but also not posing a big risk. But in one area, though, if you look at the XLU and you look at utilities as a sector, maybe this is something that's a good environment for. Maybe investors start looking to broaden out a little bit. And so, again, I was thinking about this. Let's pull up the chart really quickly. This is my chart, not Carter's here. You know, it's getting right up against like a three-year downtrend. The high in the XLU was right around the time when, you know, like yields were basically the lowest, right? So if yields are going to go sideways to possibly lower, you know, I might want to look for a breakout of that, I also want to look at the options premiums in the XLU. Okay, as you see, this is, you know, an ETF that tracks lots of different equities. You don't have that idiosyncratic risk of one name. You look at where implied volatility, the price of options in the XLU is, it's very low. It's at multi-year lows. You get it. And the other thing is, I want to target possibly June, which would be going back to that CME Fed Funds tracker. That is the probability, or at least a 65% probability of the first cut. So who knows what's going on by then? Maybe we see at the Fed May meeting, I think it's May 1 or so, that we see the cuts start to at least maybe gain some more steam. I think that should be good for the XLU. But here's the thing. I kind of want to define my risk here. And I think the options market is giving me the opportunity to do that. So I want to look at June expiration. So today when the ETF was trading at like 63.88, I could buy the June 65.70 call spread, paying about $1.50 for that, buying one of the June 65 calls for about $1.85, selling to open one of the June 70 calls at 35 cents. My max risk is that $1.50. I have profits up to 350 between 66.50 and 70 with a max gain of 350 above 70 bucks. I have losses up to 150 between 65 and 66.5, the max loss of 150 below 65. The trade idea risk, 2.5% of the ETF price, has a break even up about 4% and a max payout of 5.5% if the ETF is up 10% in 2.5 months or so. So again, I like the risk reward of this trade. I like what the options market's giving me. I also like the technical setup here, and I'm looking to kind of play the broadening out trade. How about that, guy? I mean, like, again, you know what I mean? There's probably ways to make money in a stock market that goes sideways to lower and a yield market that goes sideways to lower too.
Makes sense. And if you're looking, you know, the $70 calls that you're selling and earning that premium to sort of take that cost from $1.85 down to $1.50, that makes sense. Because if you go back and look at a chart, what I'll tell you is the April, basically the highs in April of last year. So let's call it a year ago, was basically that $70 level. So these are one of those instruments that's not going to go screaming higher in your face. But, you know, if you sort of break this trend line, do that sort of upward movement, you know, that little more than 2-to-1 risk reward in utilities, you're not going to get much better than that in an instrument like this. So, Dan, at least for me, it makes a little bit of sense.
Carter, what are you thinking of my lines there? That yellow line is that 150-day moving average. Is obviously that is the trend here. Like, how are you thinking about the XLU right here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing is that it has the same low, of course, as the equity market in terms of the October low of just 5 months ago. And obviously, on a relative basis, utilities have lagged tremendously. But the issue is the absolute strength, and as annotated here on the screen, is it a bullish or positive enough to get us above the downtrend line? And that's my hunch. And so whether we spike to, you know, sort of 70, that would be a bit of a stretch. But I mean, something into the high 68, 67 would be a big move for utilities and something that's very reasonable.
Trading options might be new for you, or maybe you've been doing it for a while. Either way, Fidelity is your go-to source for clear and relevant information about trading options. For example, ask Fidelity professionals questions during their live small classes and coaching sessions and learn more with educational videos, articles, and webinars. Plus, with Fidelity's straightforward tools and technology, you'll find it easier than ever to trade options your way. See what's waiting for you at fidelity.com/options.
Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request.
Another great partner of ours that would be worth charting. Carter, one of the first things I read this morning, you had a note out on your service there about Caterpillar. That would be Cat Tractor, as Guy would say, comes out C-A-T. This one caught both of our eyes, so we want to get your take. I want to get Guy's fundamental take, and then we're going to trade it with the options.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is an important industrial course, and it's an American icon. It doesn't get much more sort of American icon than this up there with Coke and so forth. But Caterpillar is the second biggest weighting at about 4.25% of all the industrials, GE slightly bigger. And there are other big names in there, whether it's Ingersoll Rand or Paccar and big rails, of course. But Caterpillar is particularly steep and uncorrected. It's the same general sequence as the market, but then some. So let's draw the lines. This is a three-year chart, and we have these very distinct, again, that's the October low for the market. That's when rates, again, had spiked from 2.5 on the 10-year to 4.3. Market was plunging, so was Caterpillar. And then Caterpillar surges, and you see that 65% advance, and the current advance is very analogous in terms of magnitude and duration. Let's put the two drawdowns in that occurred, and this really puts it in context, right? How you get any moment where you have a great endeavor, a great effort, you exert yourself at the gym or in the library, at some point you've got to get up and walk around and get a coffee, your eyes are going to start getting blurry, or, of course, step away from the bench press. The point is, a big expenditure of energy gives way to a pause, a rest, or in this case, a sell-off. And you see those two sell-offs are very sort of symmetrical, both about 23%. So the question is, do we have to get another 23% decline? No, but this is where, at least at a minimum, whether it's through options or some other strategy, you reduce your exposure to Caterpillar or put on a short. Let's put another set of lines on here. Look at the channel in which we now, we're not quite at the top, but that's the point. Perhaps a little bit more, but I wouldn't say much more. So at a minimum, one, if one is a long-only player, reduce your Caterpillar. If one is long and short, I'd rather be short here than long. And three, if one does use options, which are really one of the most astute sort of vehicles in all investing, put on a trade that will allow you, and this is rare in life, to have your cake and eat it too.
And let's take a look at why I think Caterpillar might be in for a pullback. We actually created a little bit of a slide. And as Carter mentioned, we're trading at all-time highs, but we're also trading towards the upper end of that range. Now, technical setup similar to past pullbacks. Let's go back to Carter's chart for a second, and that illustrates exactly what I'm talking about. You saw this move, obviously, from September 2022 into January of 23, a huge move, followed by that downdraft, a precipitous downdraft. You saw a similar move in May of 23 into basically August, September of that year, followed by a pullback. Your eyes can see that, and quite frankly, if we go back to Carter's chart, you'll see sort of the annotations. We're seeing a similar move to the upside now. And again, not to suggest that Caterpillar is broken, it's not a value, any of those things, but you know, these moves, Dan, are eerily similar to what we've seen before. And when I say before, over the last couple of years, couple that with the fact that you have a 323 average price target according to FactSet, and that sort of lines up exactly with where you should see a pullback to, given what I've just pulled, you know, Carter showed you on a chart and what I've mentioned over the last few years. So I think, you know, a cat pullback is coming, and I think you're probably going to manifest itself in an options trade that you're going to put forth.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you just look at the performance of the stock year to date. It's up 21%. It's up more than double that of the S&P 500 over the last 12 months. It's more than doubled, you know, that 20 or 30 or so percent return that it's had here. And so when I look at this, and I think what Carter just said, whether you're long, take some profits, sell calls, do something, you want to make a directional bet, the way Guy is kind of detailing, the options market is actually giving you that sort of opportunity. If you want to look out to May expiration, this is going to catch their Q1 earnings that should fall either the last week of April or the first week of May. With the stock trading around 357 and a half or so, you could buy the May 350 put for about $11. That breaks even down at 339. You have losses of up to $11 between 339 and 350. You're risking about 3% of the stock price as a break even down about 5%. And again, I just kind of like the risk reward. I like the optionality. If this thing starts to move lower, it gives me the ability to maybe sell a lower strike put and create a put spread. Maybe I continue to roll these things lower. And I guess the other point I'd say is that, listen, when you're trading long premium, right, you can lose all of the premium that you're paying. But I like to use a mental stop, right? So if I pay $11 for this put, and let's say we go for a few weeks and the stock is trading at 357, well, this put is going to continue to decay. You're going to lose money on it, right? And so that's just the way it goes with trading. If you're long a stock, if you're long futures, if whatever it is, right? Like you have the risk of suffering losses. But the thing about options is I know I can only lose the premium that I paid, but I like to use a mental stop of about 50% of the premium I spend. So if this thing gets to about $6 or $5.50 or $5, I'm going to look to cut my losses on this trade, because the last thing I want to do is own a bunch of premium all over the place when I don't have the underlying going in the direction that I want. Right. And then just losing money all over the place. That's not a good way to consistently make money trading options. And the last point I'll just make is that if it does go in the money and I have the ability to either roll or sell another put and create a put spread, I'm locking in some of that profit by doing that, guys. So again, we're just kind of trying to demonstrate the way in which we'll trade options on a directional basis around a fundamental and a technical take.
Look, I mean, this is obviously a directional play, but you're going back and looking at a couple of years of history in terms of what we've seen on a technical basis, and it sort of makes sense, quite frankly. And if you believe, you know, again, if the market starts to go sideways to slightly lower here, Caterpillar's not going to be immune. So I like this trade. You've defined your risk. I mean, $11, but as you said, the mental stop of $5.50, $6, give or take. And it makes a lot of sense. What I also tell you in terms of the May expiration, you're giving yourself enough time without question, because if you're right, as I pointed out earlier, the moves lower take place in a very quick fashion, Dan.
Yep. All right. Well, we surrounded that trade. Carter Braxton Worth, we really appreciate your work. We appreciate you being with us on a Tuesday.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, bud. We'll see you in a couple of days.
It was good, Carter. Okay. For sure. Fireplace in the back.
He's the man. You love that. You love that. Well, guy, let's do a little recap of a trade.
House cleaning, housekeeping.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, this is, I actually think it's pretty instructive. So this was last Tuesday. You were looking at Boeing. You were trying to get in front of what you thought were going to be some announcements. I don't know if you were thinking that the CEO was exactly going to step down, but it was getting to a point where something had to give here. Talk to us. So this was March 19th. You got bullish when the thing looked really, really bad, and we wanted to detail that trade, that bullish trade, using options, defining our risk. Talk to us a little bit about the sentiment, what's happened in the last week or so.
Well, what I'll tell you is, you know, let's start the bad part first. You know, the last 12 or so hours in the stock, 24 hours, I guess I should say. You know, that stock yesterday, on the back of the announcement that the CEO was leaving at the end of the year, that stock was, I think, at one point north of $196, and quite frankly, I thought it was going to continue to go. Obviously, that's not the case. It sold off since. However, my thoughts on the stock have not changed at all. It's, if anything, they've been somewhat galvanized. So maybe it's some short-term profit taking in the name. I still believe, Dan, if you put up that prior chart, that those lows that we pointed out, the lows that we made, basically, you go back to late October, early November of 2023, those are going to hold up rather well. And you know, the price action is not dissimilar to what we saw on the bounce and that time frame. So I think you stay the course here. I'm disappointed that it hasn't traded that great over the last 24 hours, but I'm sort of emboldened by the fact that we held those prior lows. So I think you stay with this trade.
Yeah, and again, I think that when you were detailing this trade idea, the stock was at 181. So think about that. You had like an 8% sort of move in a week on these sorts of announcements. If it can kind of hold in here, I think you have this trade kind of right where you want it. We were targeting a 220 sort of strike there, you know, between now and June expiration. So this trade that, you know, cost, I think, 9 back then is worth about 11, 11 and a half or something like that. So Keep an eye on it. Let's see it get above that breakout level, and then maybe you look to roll it or something like that. So we'll keep you up on that. And you guys should all, just by the way, we have all the detail about all our trade ideas with all the inputs that we're using. You can actually subscribe to our newsletter and get trade updates at riskreversal.com, and you'll see all the notes that go into the trade ideas and the constructions there. So check that out. Guy, we said that we're going to take some questions. We have a few minutes. Let's take a couple of questions. What do you say?
You got some in front of you? I'll take a couple of questions before I hightail it in.
I do. Here's one from the Matrix of Compassion. I love that name here. How do you apply rational chart technical analysis to FOMO market that often defies logic? For example, there have been several months when the S&P 500 chart signaled it should sell off, but didn't. It's a hard one here.
Well, I mean, that's a great question, and he is with us every day, and I appreciate that. And I'll go back now. It's three Fridays, and that reversal we saw, and obviously some individual names in the broader market. I thought for sure on a technical analysis basis, you know, that was going to define the top for quite some time. For individual names, you know, it's still alive, but for the broader market, clearly not, as the S&P continues to do its thing. So I don't know the answer to that question. All I know is at some point, fundamentals clearly matter, but the technicals that we talk about as often also do. And, you know, I think we're getting pretty close to that point in time, Dan.
Yeah, fair enough. I got you. And there's one that we're going to finish off with, which I think is a follow through on that. Let's go to another question here. XLI, overbought, guy. So this is the industrial sector. We just focused on the XLU, which is utilities. And this is an interesting one because, again, lots of different narratives that are pulling at this a little bit here. But, you know, one of the things you have been steadfast in the fact, acknowledging that the different sectors that basically have confirmed the highs in the S&P and the NASDAQ, you know what I mean? When you have industrials acting this way, you had energy that you've been pushing, just kind of get on its horse a little bit. You've had retailers, there's, you know, you've had banks. Look at the BKX, the way that's acted, or the XLF. Industrials are interesting to me because oftentimes it's not just how we're thinking about the U.S. economy, but it's also how we're thinking about the global economy. And I guess the narrative is that China's pretty weak and maybe Europe's not nearly as strong as some would have hoped at this point. So thoughts on industrials, guys.
Let's go to a longer term chart and you'll see some of this sort of 112 to 115 level ish. You know, that had been there you go. That really illustrates it really well. So now you can draw a horizontal line across the top of those prior highs, and you'll see that that was, in fact, resistance. We obviously recently broke out. So what do I think? You could absolutely see a back and fill back to those levels. I think that comes in somewhere between, you know, 108 and 110-ish, but, you know, we're trading 124 now. So, yeah, I do think it's a bit extended to the upside. I don't say it's broken by any stretch, but, you know, a back and fill back to those prior highs makes a little bit of sense to me, Dan.
All right, here's a great question from Daniel Day, okay? Historically, markets fall during rate cuts. What are your expectations when Powell starts cutting? So again, you know, we've heard that it was that period between when the Fed, you know, stops, you know, raising, right? And then pausing, that's been really good for the stock market generally, but it's that when they start to cut, that's when the stock market starts selling off. When you put that together with the low levels of volatility, the high levels of complacency, right? You talk about the fact that we haven't had a 2% down day in 280 days or in counting here. It just speaks to the fact that there's no fear in the market here, guys. So as we get closer, let's say to that May 1st Fed meeting, and again, we have a little more than a month, but if the Fed starts signaling through some of their Fed speak that they're going to start cutting maybe sooner than people expect right now, 65% chance of a cut at the June meeting, what do you think equities do to that? Is there a way for them to kind of thread the needle and say, hey, listen, things are good. We're just kind of bringing back restrictive right. sort of policy here.
So first of all, Daniel O'Day was a classmate and the CEO of Gilead, number one. Nice. Number two, bulls will say the following, that the historical doesn't matter here because the Fed was cutting rates when things were breaking, which made sense because they were trying to support a mark. So the market was sort of signaling for the Fed to cut. In this instance, what people will say, you know what, the Fed's cutting because they can, and there's nothing broken to your earlier point. So I'm sort of in the Daniel camp that when they start to cut is going to be the time where the market, you know, starts to feel it. But the bulls will say, you know what, you're wrong, because they put themselves in a position where they can't cut without any ramifications. We'll see. I've also said be careful what you wish for in the form of rate cuts, because if you get them, you might be getting them for the wrong reason. So look, you can, again, depending on the lens you look at the market through, you could say it's a really bullish thing or a really bearish thing.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's get one question here. This is from Light Blue Hue. That's a good name right there. It's an options question. Any thoughts on developing a strategy for going long SPY and buying a married put for around 2% of outlay for downside protection? So what a married put is when you own an underlying and then you basically own a near the money put. So you have basically all the upside of the underlying that you own. In this case, he's talking about the SPY, but then you have protection in between the price of where you own the SPY and the premium that you paid for the put. The only thing I'd say about this, and I think that this is obviously a really smart question here, it's not too different than owning a call, right? So you own premium that can decay. You know what I mean? Now, the difference is if you own a call and the thing expires worthless or you just lose most of your premium, you don't still own the underlying here. So you don't want to do this sort of strategy too frequently because it's just a drag on returns, if you will. But that's a good one. And there's probably some really good data out there about these strategies and how they perform, especially with index ETFs. All right, guy, one last question. This is for you. I think Eric Clifton is in your head a little bit, the way CNBC's Melissa Lee is often in your head, how she asks you a question on the program. What would it take for a down day in the market? Give it to me, man.
You know what, Eric? I thought I knew the answer to that. I have no idea at this point. I mean, Deadcast sent us an email earlier suggesting the internals have not been particularly good. Advanced decline line and those types of things speak to a much different market than what you see through the lens of the S&P 500. You know, you've seen continued rhetoric. You know, China in the China Straits in terms of what's going on there. Nothing seems to matter for the market. It shrugs it off. So I'm not quite sure. I think what you're seeing here is a function of month end and quarter end. So maybe things get interesting next week. But in terms of answering that question, you know, I've tried to answer it a dozen different ways over the last couple of years, and I've been wrong each and every time.
All right. Fair enough, guy. There are a few people that kind of, you know, come out every day and call it like they see them. And we appreciate your honesty and transparency. I hope to do the same on a daily basis. This is a lot of fun. Listen, I like what we're doing with Market Call here. We have a lot of great sponsors, a lot of great partners, and we're getting a lot more trading oriented here as we think about different ways to express views in the market. So that's one thing that when we started Market Call in 2024 with some new partners like Fidelity, some old great partners like CME and FactSet and SoFi, we really wanted to make a concerted effort to make things a bit more actionable, guy. And I think we're trying, not only are we trying to do that, I think we're succeeding at doing that.
That's what we're trying to do, actionable ideas. I mean, we'll obviously talk about broader market stuff and our views, but you know, anytime you can get granular and give trade ideas, I think that's what people really respond to. So we will can effort that going forward, Dan, Nathan, without question.
All right. Well, listen, we covered a lot of ground here. We got to thank our great friend Carter Braxton-Worth of Recharting for being here with us. We got to thank our friends at Fidelity. I'm thanking you. I'm going to see you up at the NASDAQ at 5 p.m. for CNBC's Fast Money. Tune in tomorrow. Tomorrow on Market Call, we have EY from SoFi. That would be Liz Young with us for the whole time.
Looking forward to it. Rangers play tonight. We will talk to you later, folks.
Yeah, thanks.